Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
But depending on who's telling them, the Baba Yaga stories are famous throughout Europe, either for just being about a really scary old witch, or for their lessons about questing for understanding, seeking truth and enlightenment. Either way, Baba Yaga was not a pleasant figure to contemplate, even less so to visit. She lived deep in the dark forest, of course, in a dank cave, smoky from the fire beneath the pot. She stirred and stirred and stirred. She was about as ugly as a wish could be, the ugliest that any storyteller's craft could imagine. Yes, huge warts and all. Through the centuries, there have been many, many stories of Baba Yaga, many told by parents to make their children behave, or else off to Baba Yaga they would go. In this particular story, Baba Yaga is a keeper of wisdom with a mean streak. Visitors came to seek her wisdom, begging her teaching, eager to be her interns and acolytes. A young seeker, shaking and sweating, came one day to the door of her hut. "Are you on your own errand?" Baba Yaga asked. "Or are you sent by another?" Well, the young man gets himself together, proud that his wealthy family has made it possible for him to attend the famous Baba Yaga, things not having turned out all that great at Harvard. And he says to her, "I am sent by my rich and powerful father." Baba Yaga grabs him quickly, throws him in the pot, and cooks him. Another comes, a young woman, trembling at the sound of cackling coming from the hut. But she approaches, and again Baba Yaga asks, "Are you on your own errand, or are you sent by another?" Well, having been drawn deep into the woods by her hopes for discovery and by her dedicated studies of religion and philosophy, the proud young woman confidently answers, "I am on my own errand." And Baba Yaga grabs her, throws her in the pot, and cooks her. Now, there are always three in folk tales, of course, and so along comes a third, a young woman, uncertain, much confused, unsure of what she seeks or what she hopes to find. Baba Yaga confronts her. "Are you on your own errand, or are you sent by another?" The young woman answers fearfully, but truthfully, "Mostly I am on my own errand, but also I am here because of others, and in large part, I am here because you are here. And I am here because of the forest, and because of something I have forgotten. And in large part, I do not know why I am here. Baba Yaga looks at her carefully and says, "You'll do," and gently leads her into her hut, where she will begin to grow in spirit and in soul, to learn and discover and to carry eventually a new light into the weary world. Baba Yaga's forest, like the forests in most folk tales, represents the mystery in which we all live. Baba Yaga herself represents all teachers who can be found in the midst of that mystery, teachers who are there when the student is truly ready. The spiritual journey is the journey to rediscover what more there is to our lives than the striving and the struggling and the suffering. Baba Yaga is clear that it has to be our journey. Such teachers have no patience with those who are sent. It does us no good to attempt a spiritual quest because somebody says we should, because someone said it would be good for us. And it does no good to start a spiritual quest full of confidence that we know what it's all about. Both journeys end up in Baba Yaga's pot. The better spiritual journeys start from where we are, in our confusion, in our vague dissatisfactions, in some persistent inner persuasion that we want to live for more than mere living. Now, we don't want to chuck it all and spend our days in a covenant, a convert, or a monastery. At least I don't think many of you do. And for most of us, for the most part, for all our complaints, our lives are really not all that bad. To varying degrees, we like our jobs or our retirement lives. We value our families and our families. But most of us, unless the world has either completely seduced us or completely crushed us, most of us would like to live more deeply, more contentedly, more gracefully. If we were to articulate it, most of us would want to live more, well, perhaps the word is spiritually. We may be proud of how much money we can make. We may even enjoy making money. We enjoy having what we can buy, our houses, our clothes, our cars, perhaps our sense of material security. And yet, here we are. Look at us all. Devoting another off day, sitting on not especially comfortable seats, in a place that is nestled in the midst of an increasingly chaotic and unstable society, much like a cottage in a forest. We have perhaps some expectation of finding here something more. Now, actually, there are many reasons for being here. Being here, perhaps, in fact, that religion didn't mean all that much to our parents. Perhaps didn't mean all that much for us most of our lives. Some are here, like the third young woman at Baba Yaga's door, who are not really sure why they are here. Some say they are here because they have children now, and they want their children to have some kind of religious root. Some say they are here because they hope to do something to change the world. Some, no doubt, are here because they are lonely, or simply because this is a place to meet people. All those reasons for coming to a religious community may be partly true, but I believe they are only partly true, because the fact is that many of those reasons could be satisfied somewhere else in other ways. It's significant, I think, that we have chosen to visit and be part of a place of religion, no matter how vaguely defined that religion may be, to be part of that rather than the Elks Club. Now, I believe that regardless of how inarticulate we may be about what brings us here, and no matter how cynical we may have become about religion, we still associate the terms church or temple with something in the dark wood of the world that may meet our need for inner yearnings. This is Baba Yaga's hut in the woods, and we are here seeking. We are not fully convinced yet that living as human beings is simply a matter of staying alive as comfortably as possible. We have an inner persuasion, a persistent inner prodding to enter the forest, find the hut, encounter the good and the true and the beautiful. Some say that the inner yearning we sometimes experience, we experience like a dim memory, as if we once had what it is that we long for and lost it. The Hindus say that the child in the womb sings, "Do not let me forget who I am," but soon after birth, the song becomes, "Oh, I have forgotten already." The spiritual journey then may be thought of as a journey home, a journey to recover what is lost. The poet Rumi says, "Honor this longing, those that make you return to the spirit, for whatever reason, be grateful to them. Worry about the others who give you delicious comfort that keeps you from prayer." Now, what keeps us from prayer, that is, what keeps us from enjoying a more spiritual, more gracious, more at ease, contented life, are the demands that the world piles upon us from our birth. What our hearts long for, say the poets, the philosophers, and theologians, what our hearts long for is some renewed experience of that state we enjoyed before the world captured us and formed us. Some, like the mythologist Joseph Campbell, say such stories as Adam and Eve are stories of our memory and innocence, of expulsion into a world of chaos and suffering and a longing to return. Here's a poem, Intimations of Immortality, by William Wordsworth. He wrote, "Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The sun that rises with us, life's star, hath elsewhere its setting, and cometh from afar. Not in entire forgetfulness, and not in entire utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come. Heaven lies about us in our infancy. Shades of the prison house begin then to close upon the growing child." Now, this sense that we come in innocence, trailing clouds of glory, are gradually desecrated, profaned by the world, and it's echoed in many schools of thought. Speaking of schools, for example, I should mention Rudolf Steiner, a scientist who in the late 19th and early 20th century established what he called the Waldorf schools. Steiner's educational philosophy was grounded in that Wordsworth-like concept that every newborn child came from a spirit or spiritual origin. The Waldorf school teaching philosophy is based on the notion that children in their earliest years are still primarily spiritual in nature, and in those years should be exposed in their education only to art, to music, and to literature. Force-feeding children on sciences and mathematics at an early age, Steiner believed, deprives the natural nature of the child, resulting in societies that are primarily militaristic, materialistic, deficient in spiritual depth and understanding. I'm beginning to believe in Steiner again. In theology, the Unitarian Universalist-leaning Henry Nelson Wyon proposed that as human beings, we have what he called an original experience. Original experience, he taught, is the experience of the truth, authenticity, integrity, and spiritual nature with which we are born. And as we make our way in the world, the original experience, he said, is covered up layer by layer by society's demand that we play act, deceive, create roles and images. Sooner or later, we discover that the world is all a stage. Now, eventually that original experience of our authentic or original selves is available to us all. It's experienced only again as a fleeting memory, a vague longing for something past. As the American Buddhist Jack Kornfield puts it, we can feel in ourselves the deep longing of a lost child, a subtle longing, as though we know something essential has been lost, something that dances at the edge of our vision, always with us like the air we forget until the wind blows. This sense of longing, the passing sensations, like the memories of idyllic, childlike existence, what some have called the awareness of an absence. These experiences draw some into the forest, into the mystery, seeking something more than mere survival. The Baba Yaga saga, the story of Adam and Eve, the hero stories of quests for the Holy Grail, philosophies, theologies, and speculations, all these are rooted in the human longing for something that is true, something that when discovered and known and understood will enrich our being and bring us peace, and yes, make us happy. And in what seems to be my old age, I have come to understand happiness to be defined as contentment. Think about it. If you are content, you are happy. In this sense of having lost something original, something needing to be found and recovered and granted, that draws the Indian to the vision quest, that presses some to seek salvation, and leads others to an endless chain of expensive therapies, workshops, comical or cosmic convictions, and magical mystery tours. And the longing, like the absent longing, the awareness of absence, also leads some here in what are called seekers, and sometimes daring others to find something, inarticulate about the terms of the search, perhaps missing the point by demanding before we leave in a huff that we get our money's worth. I don't know about trailing clouds of glory that come from some pre-existence as spirit, born to forget from the beginning who and what we are. I don't know that we have an original experience, a true self in there somewhere, waiting to be discovered by peeling off the layers of civilization like the skin of an onion. But like the Baba Yaga story, there's a feeling of truth in that. Now let me speak for myself. There are moments in some places, in the midst of some musical passages, in the midst of some wondrously placed words, that I seem to remember, faintly, faintly remember, an existence in which I had no pretense, in which I played no role, but simply was, in which I feared no evil, for I had done none. In such fleeting moments, to remember peace, acceptance, contentment. And I tell you this, after all else, it is that that eventually led to my standing here. After all the psychology I studied and preached and practiced, after all the theology and philosophy I struggled with, after all the seminars and workshops and clever collegial conversations into the boozy and smoky nights. After all that, what has me standing here is the conviction that we share the same longing. Aside from whatever else we tell ourselves we are here for, whatever else you tell me or we tell each other, for the kids, to change the world, to find a girlfriend or a boyfriend, to be not alone for at least a part of the weekend, whatever. Beyond all that, I believe we are here because we want to be, in some sense, converted. We want to be saved from something, for something. We want to find something, perhaps atheistic, humanistic form of a kind of Jesus or Buddha or Dalai Lama. There must be something. We want to make our way to Baba Yaga's hut, saying, mostly, I am on my own errand, but I'm also here because of others. And in large part, I am here because you are here. And I'm here because of the forest and because of something I have forgotten. And in large part, I do not know why I am here. But I think most of us know this much. We want to experience our lives at the end of the day as being more meaningful than we experience them most of the time. We want to be more content with what is, to finally need less, want less, give more. What matters is that you are here in the wood with the rest of us. Whether you are looking for the meaning of life or edible mushrooms, you are here. And perhaps you will be caught up in a journey. Believe me, I know. It is no more different for me than for you. I know there are times when all this talk seems foolish, when these intimations of something more seems foolish, because the intimations don't come. When the nights are long and the days are too heavy with care to even think of something like spiritual exploration, mind and body are demanding all that we are. The great theologian Paul Tillich wrote, like hit-and-run drivers, we injure our souls by the speed with which we move on the surface, and then we rush away, leaving our bleeding souls alone. The fact is that such is modern life. The fact is that such times may be most of the time. Even the spiritual masters must face the laundry, deal with one more unexpected bill, dread the day's body count and the faces of the young and the innocent. But do this. Assume that you are pure and a good creation. Pay attention when you are reminded of that truth. Follow the sudden remembrance of contentment as you might follow a butterfly come into your view. Assume that you are more truly than anything else a spiritual being, and sift and judge all demands that are made of you by that truth. Now, this is not a way to try this afternoon to see if it works. It is a way of living in the forest. It is a lifelong way. It is a way of growing back to your beginning.